Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? Success leaves footprints, and many times they get covered up, they get obscured. And what we attempt to do on this show is to remove the debris, expose the facts, discuss them, and we also make it available so that you, if you have questions, comments, suggestions, can make them. The primary topic that we're going to talk about today is George Edwin Taylor, a name that many have never heard of. It is a significant part of history because it occurred a while back. Those of you that see my notices on Facebook know that the question in there today is if you think that Jesse Jackson, Reverend Al Sharpton, or Barack Obama were the first people to run for president of the United States who are black, then you don't know our history. Our history is filled materials that are not widely disseminated. They are there. I find them. I look for them. And it is my intent and purpose to make those materials available to you. I have a blog that I post every Thursday. This Thursday's post was on, of course, George Edwin Taylor. And he ran for president in 1904. Now, I find that one of the areas it seems almost deliberately left out, I won't go quite so far, but I haven't seen any information that challenges that particular notion, is that in 1904, he ran for president on a national ticket. And that, to me, seems significant. But it shows and it dispels a number of myths that are long and deeply held in this country. This country, by its omissions in discussing people during certain periods and eras, makes it seem as if black people have done nothing to deserve freedom in this country. And that is because we chip and nitpick and blow up everything that we can that is of a negative value. When we see incidences like this, they don't come up. But in many cases, they don't come up for women either. There are other groups that have also participated in our history to see. We don't get a chance to recognize. And this is not fair, not only to the people that don't get recognized, but it is also unfair to the majority of the people. In this case, I'm talking about white people, because they are peppered with so much information saying that we haven't done anything, that we don't deserve this, that we had an equal chance. But as you look at situations that develop, you'll see it. George Edwin Taylor was born in Little Rock, Arkansas. Now, one of the events or one of the happenings that took place in the South particularly is the fact that from time to time, people would become free, freed from the shackles of enslavement. But that was only a limited freedom, because in those cases where your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, and successive generations had worked land for free, and not been allowed purchase land, not being given a wage so that you could even save anything, it was extremely difficult to survive. We ended up with slavery by a different name, and that is what we call sharecroppers. Sharecropping certainly was, on the surface, appeared to be quite a bit different than slavery, where it was completely, you were completely under the thumb. There was a little bit of breathing room, but not very much. Because remember, you didn't have any savings. You couldn't go out and buy seed. You couldn't buy equipment to farm with, even basic things like shovels, picks, hoes, because you didn't have money. So you formed an alliance with a person that owned some land. They said, you farm it, and you'll get half the profit. Well, you have to realize that this was not the best situation because in many cases, even considering retail prices, the sharecropper or the sharecroppee, the person that owned the land, was making 30 to 60% markup on everything that was provided for those people that they had previously forced to work for them for little or no, well, not for little, but for no money. So this put them continually in debt. Because people were not taught to read and write, they were beaten to death with a pencil. Every year, no matter whether it was a bumper crop or whether they just got by, you barely, if any at all, did not make any money because the pencil would beat you to death. It was basically slavery under a different name. You couldn't go to the next farm over because many of these people that were landowners plotted against you. There were situations where you couldn't sell your vegetables even if you could raise them. And so it is not a fair fight from Jump Street. In the very, very beginning, it's not fair. And so we find people in this situation. As I indicated or should have indicated earlier, George Edwin Taylor's father was enslaved. His mother was free. And this happened a lot. In many cases, we come to a conclusion, and we jump to these conclusions way, way too quick. We always think that the mixture of people that we see here in this country that are classified as black only developed from white fathers' mothers. There were white mothers, black fathers, and this was entered into in a voluntary situation. But there are many like that. And so we have to be aware of situations like that. In this case, after George was born, a law was passed in Arkansas, and other states had very, very similar laws, that if you were free, you had 1 year to get out of the state, or you could be subject enslaved. You could be re-enslaved if you didn't get out. Now, you have a spouse, you have children, you have to leave them, or else you could be forced back into servitude of the worst kind. Many people, many families had to split over this, had Taylor's mother not left the state, he would have reverted back into slavery. We see this happening in more and more places. When we look at Horace King, who had skills as a bridge builder, and you can go to AmazingBlackHistory.com and look up Horace King, and the law was passed to allow him to remain free as he built bridges across the Chattahoochee Valley. He had a skill that no one else had, but the law had to be changed to allow him to be recognized or to live free. One of my favorite topics is Clara Brown in Colorado. Clara Brown was instrumental in settling of Colorado. She moved there. She set up as a washerwoman. She took tubs and everything with her. She had worked on the East, had money to pay for a stagecoach trip to Denver, but could not because of the color of her skin. While not book knowledge, she had what they call mother wit. Mother wit. Intuition. And she studied people, and she saw a wagon master who appeared to be particularly kind. She approached him, and he allowed her to join the wagon train, except she didn't have a wagon. At the age of 60, Clara Brown walked every step of the way from St. Louis, Missouri to Denver, Colorado. And the only way that she was given this privilege is because she cooked for the wagon train, which meant she had to get up early and have breakfast prepared before they hit the trail. In the evening, after the evening meal, she had to clean up to be ready. So this was quite a strain, but she did it. That was the will of people. She had heard that many blacks had gone to the Denver area and were prospering. And we are told time and time again that we have no ambition, we can't do anything. It's only the benevolence of white Europeans that we are even allowed to exist. And that's the best thing that could have happened to us. They neglect the great learning institutions of Africa. The early Greeks got their education in Africa, places like Timbuktu that have thousands of manuscripts that have yet to be translated. We overlook the brain power of so many people. And as we look at this, we take the case of, I cannot remember his name, Garrett Morgan, who developed the gas mask that could save lives because you couldn't go into this toxic atmosphere. And he demonstrated it when they had an explosion under Lake Erie. And he was able to go in and bring out people that were trapped in this in noxious gases. But he was unable to sell the invention because people would not buy it because it was developed by a black man. Now, you can save lives. You can save white lives with it. But because it was developed by a black man, this shows the depth to which racial hatred and everything that goes with it were prevalent in this country. He finally hit success, and I'll tell you how he did it. It's ingenious, but he hired a white man to play him, and he played the role of a Native American. This Native American then went into the atmosphere and demonstrated that it worked. When people thought the invention was made by a white man, they eagerly bought it. It didn't perform any better than it did then. So George Taylor's mother had to move. And people move to the north, but they also moved west and in some instances south. We've never heard of this before. We've never heard of people moving to the south in order to avoid segregation, slavery. But Mexico never supported slavery. And there are routes, just like there were headed to Canada, into Mexico. But we don't hear about that. We don't hear the passion that people had for freedom. We're always told stories that all they wanted was to sing and dance for master and pick the cotton and just be so thankful. Understand that if you had said that master wasn't the best master in the world, even if he's beating you, that you were subject to horrors that you could not wish on your worst enemy. This, ladies and gentlemen, is what slavery was about. This is what they do not tell you. So in addition to the articles, we try to supplement it with videos, supplement it with books. We don't just want to give you a morsel or a crumb. We want to show you to the path where you can do further research for yourself and learn it. Important, even more important for white people than it is for black people. But it is embarrassing, to say the least, to know that you have a history that you don't even know about. To me, that is one of the most embarrassing things that I can think of, and it happened to me. I was a very mature adult before I came across the story of Clara Brown. I came across the story of Nancy Gooch. And Nancy Gooch was a free person in California. California in 1849. What I had been told, or what I was led to believe, is that all the slaves were in the South picking cotton, and nobody was free until after 1865, when the Civil War was over. But in 1848, 1849, these people, black people, were thriving in California. They owned hundreds of acres of land, sold fruit wholesale in California. And at the time of her death, Nancy Monroe Gooch actually owned the original site of Sutter's Mill. This is an important story to show that people have what it takes. This is the pioneer spirit. This is what the country was built on. And yet and still, we are never told this fact of history. It is a fact. And if you go there, you can find remnants of it. I was even told stories or lies by the state of California, who told me that there were no descendants of this union still living. But I've talked to them this week. Again, I maintain a fairly close contact with them, and we text back and forth fairly frequently. But we don't get this story, and it should be. It is significant. Otherwise, what you hear is you're going to hear about all of the negative that has taken place, all of the negative. Taylor went north with his mother. When he was approximately 7 or 8 years of age, she died of tuberculosis. And he basically fended for himself. At one time, under court order, he was placed with a black family, having nothing to do with the situation. That family did not live in the town where he was. They were some 7-8 miles away, which was quite some distance in those days when the primary means of transportation was walking. But he continued to make progress. He was able to go to school. Now, we see that laws are on the books that prevent people from teaching blacks to read or write, whether they be slave or free. Some escaped through the cracks and were taught, sometimes because they were taking care of people their own age, children of the master, and were exposed to it. And the problem wasn't that they could not learn. The problem was they did it too well, too quickly. We see the story of Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin Franklin, for all intents and purposes, was racist. He had strong racial attitudes. That is, until his wife was working with a school to teach free blacks in Philadelphia. To teach free blacks in Philadelphia. And when he saw how quickly and how accurately they learned, he made a significant change. And he talked about that as being a very humbling experience. If that is the case, why would you take a significant portion of your country that is struggling, trying to move forward, and deny the opportunity to people that demonstrate their abilities? Taylor went to school. She also went to a college. They had a 3-year program, and he attended for 2 years, and because of health and because of financial reasoning, was unable to complete the program. But he did classic studies in English and Greek and Latin and other subjects that were popular at the time. He became an editor. He wrote pieces for newspapers, several of them, even had a national magazine. And he was devoted to labor. Labor. Such as the workers' rights, because he felt that that was an important thing to do. This was always thrown up in his face. But he was very proficient in his field. And at this time, he's in Iowa, and he's in Missouri, and even had a national magazine that was distributed. So we're not talking about an unknowing person. We're talking about a person with skills. We're talking about a person with knowledge. We're talking about a person with passion. We're talking about a person that takes action, not just talk. Action, not just talk. And as we look at this amazing man, he worked in that field for quite some number of years. And again, all of this is significant, but yet and still we don't know about him. He was also working in Wisconsin and many of the states in that part of the world, because that's where he had gone. But he survived pretty much looking out for himself. Quite a bit of finagling when you're at the age of 7, 8, 9. At the age of 10, he was placed with this family that he stayed with until he was 20. And then he was able to go to college and learn skills that would allow him a certain degree of independence. Now, does that contrast with what we have been told all of this time, that they're shiftless, that they're lazy. Now, they're doing the work. When we go back and look at skeletons of people and do forensic analysis on them, we see that in some cases they will work so hard that muscles pulled away from bone. And this doesn't come from playing tiddlywinks, playing cards, or doing nothing. It comes from physically hard, demanding work. We have people that were being beaten with whips. You were property, had no rights under the law as a human being. It was cruel. It was inhumane. But yet and still, this man is progressing. He is doing work for other people. And most of these people, in terms of labor, were white. Many people were fleeing the consequences of living in the South. The South could have taken advantage of many of these opportunities to advance everyone. But we see they did not want free people around their enslaved people because the enslaved people were working for free, had no freedom. And it wasn't just work from sun up to sundown. They couldn't go visit sometimes their own family because of the way they were split on different farms, different plantations. This is part of the cruelty that we never get to see. So he survived. He's surviving this. He has many organizations of which he is playing a leading role in. State leagues affiliated with the National Afro-American Leagues, NAAL. The National African American Council, NAAC, the National Colored Men's Protective League, NCMP. And these were just some of the ones that he served on. Without this information, we are left with a generation that is still in existence today. Excuse me. That thinks we have done nothing to free ourselves, to advance ourselves. At one time, the University of South Carolina was predominantly black. Predominantly black. And this was after the Civil War, when they opened it to all citizens. All citizens. We were eager to get training, to get education. And remember, Benjamin Franklin had seen the progress that black people could make, the accuracy of their training, the quality of their training, the ability of themselves to repeat and reveal feelings. This is, in my opinion, one of the reasons that they did not want us to be able to communicate well. Because if you could effectively make your plight known to other people, some people would be sympathetic to your views. Sympathetic to your views. That is something they did not want to happen. No, that is unacceptable, folks. So let's keep them in the dark. And even when we did have education, excuse me, even when we did have education, it was not equal. It was not until the 1940s in South Carolina and people like Septima Clark fought to get equal pay for black and white teachers. And even at that, the black teachers had less resources, more students, and a greater burden was placed on them than there were on the white teachers. anywhere from 2 to 10 times as much was being spent on the average white student as on the black student. And as we see in cases such as George Edwin Taylor and so many others that we have not been exposed to. Now, we make an attempt to expose many of these stories on Amazing Black History. If you go there and click on blog list, you'll find over 250 articles. Not only is there a summary, there are videos, there are books, so that you too can go back and do some research. Find out that these things really existed, but they have been systematically left out of our books. And we have systematically punished a portion of our population in so doing. We have, as in the case of Garrett Morgan, we were willing to allow white people to die so that black people didn't get credit for the invention. Did you hear what I just said? We were willing to allow white people to die, or white people were willing to let other white people die so that they didn't have to depend on an invention of a black person. Cyrus McCormick, who is credited with the invention of the McCormick Reaper, never demonstrated his device. Never. He always had the black slaves demonstrate it, which leads one to believe that he did not invent it. It was probably too complex for him to even understand, but he gets the credit. And this is what we see throughout history. We have gotten to the point now where some people are so beaten down by the myths, by the basically the foolishness that we are being fed, that they don't get credit for anything. We can't inspire people. We bring you stories such as Jane Bolin. And Jane Bolin was the first black female judge in the United States and remained the only one for over 20 years. And she was an inspiration to Constance Baker Motley. And who was Constance Baker Motley? She wrote the brief for Brown v. Board, which overturned Plessy v. Ferguson. Now, we think that the country is split, never will get back together. But there is an organization now of Plessy and Ferguson, made up of the family of the judge that sentenced and the family that was affected, working together to improve situations in this country. Don't you think that that is worth being known? No, we never hear about things like that. So Constance Baker Motley wrote the brief for Brown v. Board, which got rid of the separate but equal doctrine. She also integrated, through her cases, the University of Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. She was an inspiration to Ketanji Brown Jackson, only black female to sit on the Supreme Court. Constance Baker Motley would have been a great first, although she shouldn't have had to wait that long. Jane Bolin worked for over 40 years in the courts and left a very impressionable record. But because we don't have these examples, we can't inspire ourselves. We can't inspire people to work with us because they don't know. They don't know. And that is something. People sometimes think that every white family in America owned slaves. They did not. It was actually a small percentage that were extremely rich, and they passed around theories that all white people, at least you can be like us, you're better than them. They split people that had joint interest apart with these tales. And these tales still linger today. They still linger today. Nobody benefits from that. Nobody. But I look at the youth of today, and I know that one day Alzheimer's is going to be cured. And it's probably going to be one of these young kids. When we look at Leonidas Berry, the first doctor to perform a kidney transplant between two people who were not identical twins, we don't see the advances of medicine that come from black doctors and scientists. We don't see it. When we talk about open heart surgery, we don't see Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, the first person to perform a heart surgery on a beating heart that had been damaged in a stabbing. And that person lived for decades afterwards. Decades. So here we have a man that should have been inspiring people. George Edwin Taylor should have been a great role model, inspiring people. But we don't know about him. Not only could he inspire black, but he can inspire white. One of the reasons I got in this area is I believe that people have the ability. We've just been beaten down so often. Let me tell you the story of Sheila Johnson. Sheila Johnson is the first black female billionaire in America. She shares something with Wendell Scott. Wendell Scott is the only black driver in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. They have a common trait, and this is one I want you to write down. It's one I want you to remember. It's one I want you to etch into your very being, your very fiber. Both of them, although they did not know each other, became successful because of one thing, but they had one thing in common. And I think as you see this, you'll understand what I mean. Wendell Scott would threaten to physically, and I think that he would have, throw you out of his garage if you came around talking about it can't. You can't do this. How did he compete in a high-dollar sport with modest means? He knew in his mind that when these other teams bought expensive equipment and could not get it to work, that he could. Sheila Johnson, same thing. No, can't is in her vocabulary. She has taken that word and thrown it away. Thrown it away. Don't let yourself be oppressed by the word can't, the concept can't. Because you can. You were endowed by the Creator with great, great abilities. If you knew those things that came from Africa, you would be absolutely amazed. In the, I believe, 16th or 17th century, Boston was experiencing an epidemic of smallpox. And Cotton Mather owned a number of slaves. He talked to one of his slaves by the name of Onesimus, not the one in the Bible, but same name, and asked him if he had ever had smallpox. And he said, yes and no. He said, what do you mean? And he described to him how they vaccinated in Africa. He talked the doctor into performing this procedure on a number of people. Those that were unvaccinated died at a rate of about 14 out of 100. those that had been vaccinated, this knowledge that came from Africa, died at a rate of 2 out of 100. 12 people could thank their life for something that came from Africa. And yet and still we persist in saying we are nothing. We've not contributed anything to the world. That's just one minor idea. We'll be talking about the Ashingo bone in a future episode. And it showed by that that we had counting systems 18,000 to 20,000 years ago. All other examples that come from Africa are inspired by there are 3,000, 4,000 years old. Civilizations spring up where people spring up. And this prevents us from studying that, from giving credit. I believe that God created all men and endowed them with great abilities, except some have been stymied. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about that, but when we go back to George Edwin Taylor, we find that he is very involved in life, that he is in organizations fighting for black rights. He's also fighting for labor. And when he ran for president, there were all types of reasons and excuses given that prevented his name from even being on the ballot. So his name was not on the ballot. Some people estimate that even at that, he got up to 65,000 votes. An accurate assessment cannot be determined. After he lost, he didn't quit. He continued doing what he felt was right. This is a mark, I believe, of great moral character. You're not just doing it for the glory. You're doing it because it helps other people, because you can, because you have been endowed with blessings that set you apart, that make you unique. And this is what we see. So let me read just a section here. Taylor was president of the National Negro Democratic League. Southern Democrats were enacting laws that disenfranchised most black voters and were imposing segregation through Jim Crow laws. Northern Democrats seemed unwilling and or unable to control the excesses of their Southern parties. The National Negro Democratic League was fractured by the debate over the issues of linking the nation's currency to silver as well as to gold. By 1904, Taylor was positioned to abandon the party and bureau that he had led as president for 2 terms. It was time when lynching was creeping northward and when scientific racism was gaining acceptance. Now, let me mention something about scientific racism. Scientific in this usage is completely wrong because science seeks to find answers. We do an experiment to find out what is happening, why it's happening, how it's happening. in these cases, what we're calling scientific, or manipulations of material to prove a particular point. They were far from scientific, far from scientific. And they were only used to enforce and reinforce the stereotypes that were prevalent in the day. And so we see this gentleman who could have inspired other people to pursue with greater vigor those things that were taking place. George Edwin Taylor is not the only black that was in this arena. He is significant because of his running for president. At some point, people have to do it in order for us to even be accustomed or with the idea. And I'll be very frank with you that when I looked at Jesse Jackson, when I looked at Al Sharpton, I thought that there were certain topics that they could absolutely excel in. But I had no idea how it worked when it came to foreign policy and some other things that I was leery about. And I was uncertain about casting a ballot for someone who could not win. We see that, and many people didn't believe that Obama could win until we saw the possibility that he could win. This is the same thing that Taylor was doing. But the information was bottled up, corked up, not expressed in any manner of book or anything else that most people were even aware of. So there are people listening to me today who may be history majors who may never have heard of George Edwin Taylor. Suppression of information is not, in my opinion, the American way. It is not. So we have a man that could have been an inspiration to so many people. We're now finding that as people get into politics, let's look at an example that happened in South Carolina. Robert Smalls. Robert Smalls was a slave of the McKee family in Beaufort, South Carolina. He was industrial, and they hired him out to people in Charleston, South Carolina. They received $15 a week for his labor. He gets nothing, zero, nada, zilch. But they gave him the princely sum of $1 a month. But he was an entrepreneur in his very spirit. And he would buy goods and sell on the wharf. And he was able to accumulate some money. This shows that we are capable. We're capable entrepreneurs. But when we have systems, banks and others that will not lend us money, we need to be industrial enough to make it happen anyway. We need to have control of banks. We need to have control of funds. We need to be able to determine our own destiny. And so as we have come to this point, we see what is possible. Robert Smalls, people were under the assumption that the black people on the ship, the Planter, could not operate it because they were black. They were stupid. They didn't know how to do it. But Robert Smalls came up with this plan. They thought that they could leave the ship unattended and go ashore and do their drinking and partying and whatever, and the ship would be okay. But they came up with a plan that every black person on there brought their family on board the ship. Robert Smalls started that ship. There was a very complicated process of going out of the harbor. You didn't just sail straight out of the harbor. You had to go to point one, perform certain maneuvers, go to point two. After you had been signaled by point one that it was okay to proceed to two, to three, until you could get out of the harbor. He did that. And after they got out of the harbor, out of cannon range, they raised the white flag and surrendered that ship to the Union Navy. He became a captain in the Navy. When he returned to Beaufort, and I think one of the things that scares the heck out of people is the belief that we are going to treat white people like white people have treated black people. He earned enough money to buy the house that his owners had lived in. The lady of the house was, for all practical intents and purposes, beginning to suffer from Alzheimer's and thought that she still owned the house. But he insisted on delivering her breakfast every morning. And when asked why, he said, because they were kind to me at one time. But as a South Carolina state representative and senator, and later as a representative to the United States Congress, Robert Smalls pushed education of all people, not just blacks. This is the type of thing that we see over and over and over again. We have not done the horrific things that many people expect that may come from us. So George Edwin Taylor was fortunate in that he had to get out of Arkansas or else face being re-enslaved. It split his family in half. And we talk about the cohesiveness and the strength of a family. But slave owners were doing this all the time. As a slave, you were subject to having a baby ripped out of a mother's arms and sold away to pay a debt. Ripped out of her arms and sold to pay a debt, which may have been gambling, may have been a liquor bill, may have been something else. This was eating at the very fabric, and yet we survived. Yet we survived. We sometimes had to leave. Sometimes laws were changed, as in the case of Horace King, where we see this happening. So why? Why don't we know about this man from 1904? Or is it because they are afraid that if we know we can succeed, that we will succeed? We are beaten about the head and shoulders every day. We sometimes wonder why the problem of race is so prevalent today. Because they have enjoyed a privilege that does not require them to be cognizant of what's going on around them. And yet we are faced with the effects of that each and every day, each and every hour. It's drilled into us. We see it day in, day out. And we come to the conclusion, how in the world can anybody not see it? They're not forced into it. If they have a burned-out taillight, they may or may not get stopped. If they get stopped, more than likely they are only going to be told that it's out to get it fixed. We, on the other hand, may end up in jail, may lose our job, may be shot, may be killed, and the officer gets off with nothing. Imagine yourself in the opposite situation. If you didn't have to face the realities of what's happening, to you, it doesn't exist. But to me, it does. And it's slapped in my face each and every day in one form or another. You don't even know that it's happening. We could be standing side by side and you don't know what's happening. And you think that I am concentrating on race all the time. I am cognizant of it because I've been beaten. I've been, everything that you can imagine has probably happened. Let me give you some information at this point because I'm going to open the mics shortly. Those of you that are listening on devices, I thank you. I appreciate you. I love you. And I want you to share the site with others so that they can also learn about AmazingBlackHistory.com so that we can also have discussions of what's taking place, so that we can have discussions. I am not so arrogant as to think that I know everything. I value your opinion. I value your comments. I value your suggestions about things that we may talk about in the future, things that you may think that I have wrong. Sometimes it just goes back to a simple question. How do you see this all the time? You know, I'm old enough that I remember when you had to get on the back of the bus. When you were downtown, you were thirsty, you were hot, and you couldn't have a cool drink of water. You couldn't find a restroom to use. Am I dating myself? Maybe. Part of me now. It's part of what I was forced into enduring. I'm not going around now trying to seek revenge on people for it. I am seeking to make a change. People say, well, what can I do about it? Educate yourself. Be willing to speak up. Sometimes people accuse black people of not knowing their history. And to be quite honest, we don't. And we can't stand up and say, no, look at this, because we don't know, because we weren't taught. But we need to put it on our shoulders, take it as our responsibility to educate ourselves, not only black people, but everybody. We are part of humanity, and humanity works best when all are involved. We're going to go into not this session, but a future session. It may be off sometime because it takes some doing to put these articles together. Ask that you support us when you go to AmazingBlackHistory.com. But there seems to be the concept of race is fairly recent. When we talk about civilization being around for thousands of years, when asked a question, a particularly learned professor goes back to a specific person when we talk about the racial divide. Gomez de Zurara in the 1800s was paid by the Portuguese who were into slavery at that time. And he wrote materials basically stating that blacks were brutes, they were unintelligent, could not be socially reformed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which is the basis of what we're facing now. That happened only a couple of hundred years ago. Before that, people were taken on face value based on where they were from. If you were born in France, you were French. Lord Burton is German because he was born in Germany. He has dual citizenship. We won't go down that road at this point in time, but that's what existed. Now, as I was telling you about housekeeping, those of you that are on devices, we love you, we care about you, we want you to share that information. However, as I open the mics, I cannot see you if you're on one of those devices. Even if you're on your cell phone and are connected through the internet, I cannot see you. But if you call in that number, 646-668-17. I can see you. I can open your mic. I can listen to your question. I can attempt to answer your question. And we can make this a two-way communication. I don't hold myself out as the expert on everything. Some of you may be jumping up and down disagreeing with me now. That's fine. But progress is made by intelligent, mature discussions between people who will listen to other people. As long as they're reasonable, it comes down to a question of what is reasonable in this particular case. I am the judge on that and retain that title, and that's, I guess, why it's my show. But anyway, we're going to do that. And again, if you have comments, questions, suggestions, or whatever, 646-668-8217. Write that number down and save it for future use. Because every Sunday we're here at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. We welcome your comments. We welcome your suggestions. We welcome you. And so with that, I am going to open the mics and see if we have communications coming through. And anybody else who wants to join us can do so. I see we have a couple of people on that I can see. I know by looking at analytics in other forms that we do have many other listeners around the world. And the way that we can interact is using that number, 646-668-8217. Keep that number handy, because any time that we're on, that would be the way to make the contact. I see my good friend Marshall joined us again today. Marshall, do you have any comments or suggestions for me, my friend?
Yes, Mr. Abercrombie, how are you doing today? Hope you're well, you and the family.
I am well.
Yes, great, great. Yes, I kind of got in on you on a latter part because the wife and I, we were gone out, but I'm certainly enjoying, and I always enjoy you listening to you and the conversation that we have. But I find out one thing about a lot of my brothers, my good brothers, I asked them about listening to the program, and they seem to enjoy the football game more than they do knowledge. I mean, look, that football game, when it's over with, one team won and one team lost, but everybody
right.
has their own comments about who did what and what the other one did. But that's not really important to me. What's important to me is getting knowledge about why we where we at today, because nobody has taken the time to find out really who we are. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know. And if you think that NBC and CBS and all of those people is going to tell you about some black history, you just have another thought coming, especially when it's up to the point where that some black person did some great thing and you're going to hear it on the news. You're not going to hear that. And I've been listening to our BIN, Black Information Network, and how they telling what the black community is going through and what they're doing, good things and bad things. That's what they do. I've heard more about the NAACP in 3 months than I heard in 10 years on CBS and NBC and the radio, the stations on TV that we watch, because they don't want you to know.
Yes.
No. It's important that somebody, and God bless you, man, you're doing a wonderful thing. I'm sure more people is gonna tune in, because more and more people is finding out more and more about yourself. When you don't know who you are, then we really lost.
Right. And they don't want us to know who we are.
No, no, no. They know, but we don't know. That's sad. That's sad.
It is.
Yes, it is.
It is. Now, I see one other person on. I don't know if they have any comments or not, but if you do, go ahead. Jump right in. Any comments, listener? I guess not, but we love them and appreciate them anyway.
Yes.
Because our mission is to get the knowledge out. And let me mention one thing that happens, Marshall.
Yes.
I didn't study much Black history because I didn't know that it was out there. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what I was looking for. And this is why we have the site. This is why we have these programs, to introduce that information to you.
Yes.
And not just to bring you one little paragraph, but to try to flesh it out as to what's happened, when, where, how. Do you know that we are making history each and every day? But nobody tells us. And so we can't inspire our children. And when it comes to our children, I want to give parents and also the children some information. We can excel in academics. We can excel in academics. We've done it. We've done it all along. But what you have to do is you have to do what you must do before you do what you want to do. You have homework, get it out of the way, get it done. And it de-stresses your life. And when we get to the point where we can do that, not only will it help us in school, but we may earn a scholarship. And even at that, we have developed work habits that will propel us into our adult world, whether we're working for someone or we're working for ourselves. And we, Lord knows, we are entrepreneurs from day one. But as we look at what's taken place, so many of our communities have been flat destroyed by the interstate highway system because they run highways through areas where they were talking this morning about an area of, I believe it was Atlanta or Birmingham, one of those cities, where they could have taken the highway through an area that had no houses, or they could go through people's yards, through their living rooms. And what did they do? They went through the living rooms. They displaced hundreds of thousands of people with this interstate highway system. Tulsa right now is split because of interstate highways. When we talk about Brooklyn, North Carolina, the same thing. There was an area in the Raleigh-Durham area. Same thing happened. It was prosperous. Black people were displaced. And we end up thinking that we can't do it, but we have done it, and we need to done it again. So,
so true, so true. Yes, there is a black girl in Atlanta, Georgia. Since the COVID has struck, she has come up with three different businesses that she is putting out there and doing well with all three of them. One girl, three different businesses. And they also I also watched the Revolt of Station. They're going to be giving away $200,000 to the person that has the best business for the entire country, not just for blacks, but for the entire country. Someone on Revolt is giving that away. It's going to be $200,000 to help them go in, that it will help them in the business that they are going into. Now, that is that's a great thing.
That is absolutely a great thing. We've done it, and we can do it again.
Do it again.
I believe one of the reasons that when we look at overall income by racial groups, One of the reasons that we're as low as we are is because we do not own and operate our own businesses, and we can do it. It's possible. I'm working on some things that I hope to bring out in the not-too-distant future that will allow us to get a jump start on our finances and being able to empower ourselves, because we're running to someone that really doesn't want to loan money to us or help us get started. I think it takes more than just the loaning of money. I think it takes an investment of time and expertise and resources, which I
right.
don't see happening. But we can do it. We can do it. You know, we've basically driven the black farmer out of business. There are some, they're prosperous, but we need to redevelop that. Take our black farmers and buy the produce that they produce. One of the reasons that we didn't do well then is they passed laws that you couldn't sell your produce. So we need to look for those places, whether it's farmers markets or whatever it is, and make ourselves better all along.
Yes. There was a time in when we were on the farm that I remember our cousin, he was getting paid not to farm. He was getting paid, the government was paying him not to plant. And I just never did understand that and still don't understand it. How are they going to pay you? Not, well, I knew it wasn't very much, but it was probably worth what they were giving him, because a lot of that land and all that we was attending back then was land that was not so profitable land. So you had to work that land real hard. So he may have been making more by not farming than he was by trying to farm. But he was getting paid not to farm, and I never understood that.
Yeah, there's some questions about the practices and their loan procedures and everything else. You know, we have to dig a little bit deeper into the process of what's going on there, because they have really shortcutted us. Now, let me mention something else. We think that when we get a little bit of money like that, that there are lots of people that jump on it, but at the same time, they are giving big bucks to many of these corporations, the oil companies, the other industries are getting away with highway robbery. But it's the way that it's presented that we don't know about it. We need to change that as well. But, yeah, I have a hard time figuring out some of those things. What they should have been doing is teaching people how to market their produce rather than what we're doing now, because small farmers can make organic produce, which keeps from poisoning ourselves to death. We're still coming out with residues and stuff in products that are not good for us, and we're seeing what happens in the West, where we're running out of water. I mean, we should be smart enough to do better. Hydroponics and other means of watering and producing food is possible. And one of these days, one of us is going to come across that, and we're going to change the world.
Yes, that's great. You mentioned something last week about the white gold in South Carolina down in Charleston, and I think I may have heard that before, and that was rice, and it came from
right.
Africa. I'd say, you know what, you said it, the way you said it, that white gold, man, it sounded just like it was yellow gold. Well, it was. It was something
it
new
was.
And was brought from Africa, and it was probably better than cotton. I'm not sure of that, but it may have been getting more money for it than they were for cotton. I'm not sure. the white gold.
Well, see, it grows well in that area because you could flood the fields, which were required. The Europeans didn't know how to raise it, so they brought Africans over specifically to do that, and that was a very important crop in South Carolina. You know, we had 2% of the people were slave owners, and they were responsible for over 50% of all of the money produced in America. And yet the slaves that were doing the work get no credit at all. And it wasn't just work, it was knowledge. Horace King built bridges that the white people couldn't build. And that's why they changed the law to allow him to stay free in the Chattahoochee Valley. Otherwise, he would have been re-enslaved and probably out picking cotton. Now, Solomon Northrop, who was the person mentioned in 12 Years a Slave, was never a slave until a free man was captured and sold into bondage in the South. So even if you weren't in the South, you were subjected to it. The 1850 Fugitive Slave Law ensured that. So they put property rights over human rights. And that ain't the way to do it. That's another reason that these things are there. And then we went through the Jim Crow laws. Right now, let me mention this to you. On Tuesday, they're having the runoff election in Georgia. Normally, it would be 3 or 4 more weeks down the road before they had it. But what they were trying to do is to make sure people didn't have the opportunity to register in the runoff election. And it's all part of voter suppression, voter suppression. They don't want that. And the difference is when we have a 50-50 Senate, we operate under a joint operating agreement. And there have to be equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans on all committees. And a lot of things never make it out of committee because they won't let it out. But if we get 51 to 49, that changes. That changes. We are in control at that point. Now, we don't have the House, but we could have had the House if we had gotten out of our lazy chair and gone down and voted.
Yes.
You know, usually the person that's in power loses in the midterms because everything that people can think of to vote them out, they do. But we survived that well intact. It wasn't a red wave this time. But we need to vote in every election. When the League of Moms in Berkeley County won school board elections, they fired the black principal. They fired black administrators just like that. This is what we have to prevent. So there is no unimportant election. We need to run. We need to get the experience of running. If a position comes up as a dog catcher, we need somebody in there running for that position. I don't care what it is. There are no unimportant elections. We need to be there and hear the heartbeat of what's going on. So always, and Marshall, you know, I have the greatest respect for you and Leon and the people that you are there because you don't just talk about it, you do it.
Yes, we do. You're involved.
You do it.
Try our best to do it, and let the light shine on us, and that people can see in us what we trying to do. That's what we try to do. Try to be that Christian. The sermon, one of the best sermons I ever seen was the one I heard, and you know, not so much a talking about what I'm gonna do, but what you doing. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, we used to have black preachers that led something. Now they want to lead their Mercedes down the road or whatever kind of fancy car they got, and they're more interested in that than what's happening in our houses and in our communities.
Yes.
And I may be, I may be wrong, but that's my opinion.
Yes. Have mercy.
Anyway, if there are no other comments, we're going to go ahead and end this session. I hope that those of you listening have learned something. I hope that you'll get in touch with us, comment, use that number next week. I have not picked my topic for next week, but I'm sure it's going to be a dandy. So hopefully we will see you all again here next Sunday at 4 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio /Crown Talking Drums. The program you're listening to is Did You Know? And Success Leave Footprints, which we try to expose. And I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. All of my friends, be blessed. Learn. Get involved. Take action. We'll see you again next week. Be blessed, my friends. Be
blessed. God bless you. Bless.